this is Yvette C. Owens of Destiny Speak, and I'm coming back with another episode of Into Soul Leadership. And today I'm asking you the question, have you been wondering what leadership looks like in this digitized age? Have you been wondering really how can you keep up with it? First of all, how can you keep up with it? But most importantly, how can you optimize it as a leader and helping your team innovate? My guest today is Mr. Eric Brown Jr., and he's going to help us understand the role of technology specifically in being innovative as leaders, helping our teams be innovative, and therefore our outputs, our products, our services are going to be far more greater and going to be not only keeping up, but could potentially supersede our competition. So Eric, he is the founder of Elevate Coaching and Consulting. He's an alumnus of Microsoft. He's recognized authority in leading edge digital strategies. He's a strategic technologist, coach, and advisor. Can you say that three times? He guides startups to Fortune 100 companies to envision realize digital transformation. I'm going to ask Eric to really share more about who he is before we jump into this conversation, because I know for myself, I try to stay ahead of things. I try to stay in step, but sometimes it can be overwhelming, especially as a leader, as an entrepreneur. So how do I balance? How do I make sure I'm in the right places at the right time and using them to maximize my message across the world and to make sure that I'm visible, right? So Eric, welcome, welcome, welcome.
No, I appreciate you having me.
So is there anything in your background that I left out that the people really should know about?
No, I mean, you did a great job. I think for me, I am an explorer. I am one that is very curious, a leader, a dreamer, an achiever, a scholar. But ultimately, outside of this, the technology, I have a passion for people and being able to leverage technology to solve human-centric problems.
And so that goes along with your guiding principle of enter to learn, go forth to serve. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Aligns with one of my books called No Bosses Allowed, Lead to Serve and Transform. So love that. So let's jump into this conversation and I'm going to ask you a few questions and we'll just go back and forth and see how this evolves. If you are watching, please leave your comments, your questions. I'll make sure that Eric gets them and that we get a response back to you. I'll make sure to answer what I can. So Eric, how do you define innovation in the context of today's digital landscape? And what role does leadership play in fostering it?
No, excellent question. You know, innovation, you know, is something that I believe is first a mindset. It's being able to take new and creative ideas and implement them in a unique way to be able to improve upon a process, a system, to be able to help people do something more efficiently, do something differently, or be able to solve a particular problem that's in a current process. And so oftentimes technology is involved, but it's not necessarily mandatory. Sometimes improvement and innovation can be just focusing on people and process, or it can be a combination of people, process, and technology. But as you think about improving people, process, technology within an organization, whether it's a nonprofit, whether it's a startup, whether it's a large corporation, leaders are involved with being able to paint that vision, but ultimately crafting an environment that's conducive for this type of change, whether it's something that's very innovative on the edge, doing something that hasn't been done before, or even doing something that's been proven in the marketplace. It still takes a leader to be able to craft that vision, but guide a team of being able to make that idea a reality.
That's great. And so I was talking to a leader just this afternoon, and she was sharing the challenges that she's been having in getting her team to adopt and use some of the technology that they have at their disposal in their organization. And this is a nationwide organization. I think one of the burning questions that we have is, as leaders, how do I help? And we'll get to this. There's change in that I have to change from a different technology to another technology or enhance upon that. But right now I'm talking about how do we get people on our teams and in our organizations to even embrace technology where we are. Because honestly, I said to her, I said, people who are really fighting against the grain of technology, they're so far behind because technology is moving so fast, right? So mm-hmm. how does a leader really inspire, motivate, and ignite that fire, that at least ignite the curiosity for their people to start to use technology?
No, that's a great question. And it's definitely a challenge that I see quite a bit. And ironically, the answer, in my opinion, is not pushing more technology, but it's actually taking a step back and listening and really actively listening and saying, well, what are the problems that the team has? Why did we choose this technology in the first place? What are the potential impact that the organization will have by leveraging the technology? And although that small group, the leadership team may understand, okay, this is going to help improve the bottom line. It's going to be more efficient. It's going to help with tracking. We're going to be able to send data in this particular way, format. But if the people who are using it on the everyday don't understand that value and it becomes a hindrance to their pattern and it's something else to learn, then you may get resistance. And so one of the things I recommend is, one, is being able to listen and understand what their challenges are, but two, being able to find champions who do understand the value and who are able to leverage it and get the efficiencies to be champions within the organization to say, hey, in addition to us going forward, we have to be a learning culture, but mm-hmm. also one to say, hey, how are we able to teach and to be able to meet people where they are in their development and learning journey?
That's great, because I love the fact that they have to understand the value in it. And when I talk to organizations and teams about change, it's like there is a currency, a frame of reference currency that we have to speak to each audience with. Right. So this audience, what's their frame of reference? What's the currency that's going to make them want to buy into the change? Right. And another group might have a different currency that you need to share. So it's really about what's in it for me. Why should I do this? And when it's above and beyond the individual and it's like, well, it's more organizational, the leader really has to really express, model, and reinforce what they're asking people to do. And to your point, show the benefit. Because if people don't get that benefit and don't really internalize it, they don't do what they need to do. And so you're struggling about, I mean, this leader was saying, she's wanting them to share information early. I've given them the script. I've given them the picture. All they have to do is hit share. She's having to struggle to do that with them. I want to ask a different question. In your experience, what strategies have proven most effective for leaders seeking to cultivate a culture of creativity and innovation within their teams?
No, that's a great question. I think in my experience, the leaders that are open to having a growth mindset and having a culture of a growth mindset, meaning that it's okay if we don't necessarily get it right the first time. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you're going to lose your job or get a bad report, where being able to learn from mistakes is a part of the culture that fosters a place to say, you know what, it's okay for me to be able to try something that I haven't done before, or be able to add things together, or be able to collaborate with teams I typically don't. Because if I fail, it's not final. But when there's organizations where trying new things or going against the grain is not necessarily favorable, or there is negative consequences, that stifles innovation, it stifles that creativity that naturally can happen when you have an environment where there's space and time to be able to learn from results that may not necessarily be optimal.
So how have you been able to get a leader to get into that mindset? Because if they don't start to adopt that mindset, then it's hard for them to do what you're asking them to do. Or no, can you give us an example of even where you've had to do that, which I'm sure you've had?
Yeah. I think one of the things that I do in my role, I consider myself to be a guide, is if you're going on a mountaintop and I'm like, hey, I'm here going alongside you, showing you the pitfalls, but also being able to provide perspective and ask the right questions along the way. And one of the questions I typically ask leaders is, if you do nothing, what is the consequence? And oftentimes they realize that, hey, you know what? The results that we're getting are not necessarily going to lead to us being able to be in a good position. And I'm actually getting negative feedback now. And so I position it saying, well, what is the cost of doing nothing? And so then being able to say, hey, are you willing? Are you open to being able to create space and room for your team to be able to do something slightly different in order to get a different result? And once they're able to see that, hey, maybe I'm in the way, or maybe our culture is in the way of our growth, we continue this down this path, we know what the results are going to be, they're able to take a step back and say, you know what, we're open to be able to make a change because the pain of being the same is going to be costly.
Yeah, and cost is everything, right? When you say, what's the cost of doing nothing, and have really walked people through quantifying that cost, that speaks volumes to people, right? How important is it, the concept of lifelong learning in maintaining the competitive edge in leadership and innovation?
Yeah, I think oftentimes organizations find levels of success in a process or competitive advantage, and they work that and they take advantage of that opportunity, that advantage they have. But if they don't necessarily have space within their organization for research and development, for continuing learning, at some point can find themselves behind the ball, or, you know, in a place where they're no longer being able to provide the best, latest, and greatest opportunities for their clients or their business processes, et cetera. And so I think that being able to have a culture where there's space, whether it may not be every team, but in some teams, being able to say, hey, you're open to learn and to be able to navigate, to be able to go to external vendors or go to conferences, be able to get different ideas and bring them back so that we can continue to improve and grow. When you don't grow, then you ultimately are going backwards.
Yeah. And in my Victor framework, the I stands for innovation, right after V, which is vision. And I talk about vision performance. And so it's, innovation is everything. It really is everything. Things become stale if we're not innovative. It's not just about, oh, we want to feel good about it. It's really about sustaining and being resilient in the marketplace, whatever your industry, that you have to be innovative. Right? How do we raise up leaders or mentor leaders to become more innovative and even think out of the box? Because some people get into this route and it's like, this is how we do it. This is how we do it. This is how we do it. You know, and just a little tweak here or there. And they think, oh, wow, this was major. But it's like, no, how about let's just throw it all up in the air, or look across the street at a different business that is doing something totally different and see what really could stick and stay with us. So how do we get leaders to really start to adopt the innovative practices?
No, ultimately it starts with them. I think as leaders, we're oftentimes the lid of our organization and of our influence. And if we personally aren't necessarily learning and growing, whether it's through personal coaching or being able to get different insight and perspectives, prevent others from being able to go and learn and grow as well. And so I think that it's important as leaders to create a learning culture, being able to create intentional spaces and time to be able to learn, or to be able to hack, or to be able to have cross-disciplinary type of interactions. So can engineering and sales, or engineering and marketing, or marketing and research, how can everyone be able to cross-pollinate and have times to be able to work together in an intentional way to be able to get different ideas, but also be able to quantify or see different challenges from different perspectives? And I think that it's important to be able to make that a part of the culture, whether it's having an annual hackathon within the organization or being able to work with a vendor to be able to take some of the top ideas and be able to create prototypes, or be able to take even the early in career individuals and be able to have them come up with ideas and pitch it to the senior executives, and being able to say, hey, why are the ideas all coming from the same place? How are we able to create a culture where all voices are heard, and being able to implement some of those things in a safe way?
So let's continue with that, especially around the early emerging leaderships or even students. How important is mentorship from the context of understanding that we are and shall always be forevermore in a digitized age, right? It's only going to intensify. It's only going to keep expediting and speeding up. So how important is it around the mentorship piece, and what does that look like?
No, great question. And I think oftentimes when you think about mentorship relationships, you think of someone who is very senior being able to mentor or guide someone who is earlier or young in career. And that is typically the model, but I would like to shift the perspective of that dynamic in that relationship that it is two-way. There's value being given and received on both sides. For the first time, I think, in a long time, we've had so many different generations within the workforce. And so being able to say, hey, guess what? All the different generations are also customers or consumers in the marketplace as well. And so being able to understand, all right, well, how does this generation think? Or, you know what, how are they leveraging this technology in a new way that can maybe transform, innovate our business model, or be able to have a new channel of being able to interact and be able to meet customers where they are, but also being able to say, hey, here's some tried and true principles and character development that's necessary to be able to sustain this growth that we're aspiring to. And so I think that being able to have cross-generational relationships is crucial. And oftentimes, it's not something that happens in an intentional way. I think that through social capital, you may be able to rub shoulders with a particular leader and be able to build that relationship. But I think that from an HR perspective, from a learning and development perspective, being able to create cohorts or opportunities where this happens in an intentional way, whether it's being able to recruit students or be able to have hackathons with students, or be able to say, hey, here's a theme or a topic, and let's create a think tank and intentionally be able to create a dynamic where there is representation across the spectrum of the workforce.
Yeah, I love that. And especially as you were talking, I'm thinking about organizations really working towards helping people feel belong, that they belong in those spaces. And one of the things is, there's no doubt about it that the younger people coming into our organization are technically sound. They've been born with it. They've been immersed in it. And so if we partner and not be threatened by it, but what the older or the more senior people in the organization have is they know the business concepts that they're trying to really bring forth or the ideas, but I might not know how to do it on a technical perspective, or even to your point, how I can streamline this workflow, but here's what I really want to do. So if we are open, pull this a cohort team together, or if there's an individual and say, here's what I'm thinking. Now, from your perspective, how would you see this materializing? And then people feel belong. They feel like, oh, I'm wanted. You care about what I think. You give them a voice at the table and you see it through. And I think it's important that if for some reason it's not presented or come to for life right away, that we communicate to the people who've been involved and why, so they don't think that they just wasted their time, because everything can't be implemented at one time or at any given time. But we need to make sure that when they share those thoughts, that they know it was valued and we are still keeping that in our mind or in a place, in an incubator that we can go and pull it out and dust it off and revamp based on where we are and whenever we're ready to implement it. Tell me more about your experiences in working. You've been working with some of these great organizations. You've been in Forbes magazine. So tell me about an experience that just highlights in your mind about over your career and what you've been doing.
No, I've done quite a bit. One of the things that I'm very passionate about is this concept of more personal computing. And so right now we're in the age of artificial intelligence and being able to create things in a more efficient and effective way. One of the things that we've been doing for a long time, even now, we usually are typing or we're looking at a screen. And we've been adapting to computers since computers have been in existence. But now what's interesting is computers have the ability to adapt to our natural way of interacting. And so today, you have children, nieces and nephews, grandchildren, they are able to quickly interact with the iPad, be able to talk to digital assistants and have them turn on music or change the channel, et cetera. And so now we're actually interacting with technology the way we interact with each other as humans. And so because of sensors, we are able to have more natural ways where the technology can adapt to us. And so long story short, in my journey, I've been able to help organizations look at systems and processes and say, hey, how can, instead of us adapting to the way we've always been doing it, how can we expand the way we look at how can it be more ergonomical? How can it be more accessible? And how are we able to leverage this technology in a way that really keeps our human nature at the center and really is a way that enables things that we do versus us have to change to be able to interact and fit the technology. And one of the ways that I've focused on that is a concept called mixed reality. And so it is the blending of the physical and digital, being able to take holograms, 3D models, and be able to place them in the real world. And so, for example, if I am a physics teacher and I want to be able to show various molecules how to interact or how something works at a molecular level, typically I would look at a book, I have a video, but now leveraging immersive headsets, I'm able to put on glasses. They're able to see those models at life scale and be able to look at it from different perspectives and say, wow, I never knew that level of vibration was happening, or, you know, this happened at this particular moment. I wasn't able to grasp that when I was looking at the book, but now that I see it here, I have a deeper level of interest and I actually understand it in a more natural and intuitive way. And so whether it's from an education standpoint, whether it's from a safety standpoint, being able to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to show you how to use this forklift, but I'm going to have you do it virtually first before putting you on there so that you don't cause any harm to yourself or anyone else. And so what's interesting is this new way of being able to interact with digital objects in a natural way is opening doors for different modes of learning, but also different modes of innovation and efficiencies and being able to solve problems and be able to learn and understand. I've been able to do that across the board, whether it's NASA, Mercedes-Benz, et cetera. A lot of these organizations are finding processes that are saying, hey, how can we make this more efficient? How can we make this easier? And how can we leverage existing technology, but make it more human-centric? And mixed reality, HoloLens, augmented reality, now spatial computing are ways of being able to serve that in the marketplace.
That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing. And it would be so much fun to learn and train that way. Yes. So that is absolutely incredible. So, man, I could keep going on and on because as you talk, more and more questions come up. So we're going to have you back if you don't mind coming back and sharing more with our audience. But in the meantime, tell people how they can follow you, how they can connect with you, how they can stay in touch and watch all the tremendous things that you're doing.
Yes. So you can follow me on all social media, Eric Brown Jr. _ or Eric Brown Jr. And so eric@ericbrownjr.com to email me directly, and happy to connect, be able to understand the problems you're trying to solve, be able to inspire and explore new possibilities.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate what you bring to the table and what you bring to the community workplaces. It's just amazing. I love that personalizing the whole experience is just huge. And a follow-up question would have been around how we personalize and safeguard the use of AI so it doesn't hurt other groups, right? But we can leave that as a cliffhanger for people to come back. Unless you wanted to kind of address it real quick right there. So
Sure. I think at high level, it's important to be able to have policies, governance, and systems in place to ensure that the automation, the models, the training of the models, the whole process is responsible. And I think that, you know, innovation is great, but it's important to do it in a responsible manner. And so until you have those guardrails in place, it's good to have a sandbox to be able to innovate, but to be able to ensure that it's not causing harm, you have to do your due diligence.
Yeah. Well, I thank you again for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm so glad we were connected. We will stay connected. And so thank you all for watching. This is another episode of InterSoul Leadership, and we go the gamut. And so don't be afraid of technology. Let's be more innovative so that you can make your vision perform to its most optimal capacity. And until next time, enjoy life in the digital age. Bye-bye.